Tonight on the Daily Debrief, the chilling prison confession of killer dad Chris Watts. We break down the recordings of the man who admitted strangling his wife and daughters. Plus, defenders of R. Kelly are backing him up after an explosive interview and despite his arrest over child support. Also, a verdict in the case of a Florida cop who shot and killed a stranded motorist. The nation's top criminal cases are on the Daily Debrief. It's Thursday, March 7th. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to be with you tonight, along with Julie Rendleman. So let's get straight to it. Chris Watts has nothing else to do but sit in prison for three consecutive life sentences, plus another 85 years. So he's been talking to authorities about the murders of his wife, his two daughters, and his unborn son. Watts pleaded guilty to killing them all late last year. While prosecutors did have enough evidence to go to trial, they did not know everything that was going on inside Watts' head. Recently, authorities talked to him in prison about killing his wife, killing his children, and about his relationship with his mistress. We begin our review of the prison house recordings with the tears Watts shed as he recalled suffocating his children at the site where he disposed of their bodies.
So what happened when you got out there?
I took Shanann out. Just to place off to the site. Mm-hmm. And then...
What were the girls doing when you were doing that?
Just sent them back to the truck.
And then what happened after that?
CC was first. She did have a blanket. She had a blue blanket. A Yankee blanket.
So was she alive when she went into the oil tank? No?
I put the blanket over her head.
And that's how she passed. Good grief.
I put the blanket over her. I didn't want to. No. I strangled her right there in the back seat.
Okay.
What was Bella doing?
She was sitting right beside her.
Did she understand? Did she know what was going on?
She didn't say anything.
And then the same for Bella. Just without a blanket?
With the blanket.
Oh, okay.
I didn't look. It's like every time I closed my eyes, I started to hear her saying, "Daddy, no," and that was it.
That's what Bella said.
I hear that every day.
Do you really? I'm sorry, man.
Sorry doesn't really take anything back that I did.
I know. Is it possible that in your mind you didn't want them to suffer throughout their life? Was this like a mercy thing?
I mean, you can say that like after the fact, but it was just like, I don't...
You didn't feel like that during it?
I just didn't. I felt like it was just like an anger with Shanann, with everything that I was just taking it out on everybody that was in front of me that morning.
Yeah.
Kids growing up without their parents, depending on what grandparents or whoever they grew up with, seemed to be fine, but it was just like, it was an anchor thing. It was just like...
And what were you so angry at Shanann about? Like, if you could pinpoint it.
Nothing that makes anybody to want to do this. I mean, you could be angry at your spouse like your whole life, but you should never have done anything like this. You should never let it get to that point. But I let it get to a point where I've never been angry before. Like, this was like the epitome of being angry.
Yeah.
the epitome of, like, showing a rage, the epitome of, like, losing your mind. And even, like, some people in here said, dude, like, the heck happened? You must have freaking snapped. And, like, I just walk away. I'm just like, you know, I don't see it in my mind how it could have, like, you know, I look outside every day. I'm like, what could we be doing right now? Yeah. But, you know, right now I'd have a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a more than likely a 1-month-old son. And a beautiful wife. And I'm just like, right now it's just me.
Let's back up now on the timeline and listen to Watts describe the killing of his own wife. He says it happened the morning after she came home from a work trip. She accused him of cheating, and he said he no longer loved her.
Yeah, it was like, I don't want to, like, try to think of the last things we were talking about, but it was, you know, like, I love you anymore, and then she was like, you're never going to see the kiss.
Oh, that was it. That's perfect, Chris. That's exactly what we need. Okay. And I know it's hard to walk through that again, but that's exactly what we need. So then, as soon as she started talking like that, then it was on. Okay.
But it was you saying that you didn't love her. Is that right? Okay.
And her saying you're never going to see the kids.
Yeah.
Okay. I can imagine how that made you feel. I'm sorry.
It didn't warrant what it did.
Yeah. And then the fact that she didn't scratch at you or anything, is that just because it was so powerful?
I don't think it. I mean, it didn't feel like I've never done that before, put my hands on anybody before, so I don't even know what kind of force I was putting on her neck.
Okay. But
like I said, 2 to 4 minutes, I don't know if that was 2 to 4 minutes.
Did you cover her face at all during that time?
Both hands on the neck. Okay. And so, if it's done right, I mean, that can be a matter of seconds before someone on their carotid loses oxygen to their brain and is out, right? Did it seem like it was that quick, or? Okay, maybe a minute, maybe two? Okay. Screaming? Okay. All right. Did you see eyes go bloodshot or anything like that? Okay.
Okay. And you kept talking about the mascara. Did you see mascara on her face?
Yes, that looked like it was like. That's what I attributed it to.
Was she crying? Is that why? At what point did she start crying?
When I'm talking about the relationship, about not being compatible. And when she's talking about there's somebody else, that's where she started crying. That's what I thought, you know, it was mascara. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if it was it.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Was there a pillow or something you wanted to ask
about? Yeah, so there was. Was there ever, at any time, a pillow or the sheet or anything involved in like that, on her face specifically? No?
No, like the sheet that you kind of wrapped around to help get downstairs, that's about it.
The one that was at the site? Okay. And then the other sheets, they were in the trash. At what point did you put those in there?
I think that was...
obviously after I was in the house.
Yeah. I think it was probably the next day or so.
Okay.
I think it, like, I don't know. I'm not sure, like, what happened. This is hard to talk about, like, when you strangle someone out of, like, sometimes, I guess they use the bathroom.
Yeah.
So, it was, like, I think that's one of the major reasons why, because I think that had happened.
Oh, okay.
You said she was sleeping face down at one point? Was her face in the pillow, or was it turned to the side, or how did that?
Kind of like on the side. She was kind of like a side sleeper, but she was more down than usual.
Okay.
But then she turned, rolled completely onto her back when you start talking to her?
Okay. Now, as hard as that was, I think you need to talk about the girls too, okay? All right. Thank you. So with the girls, you talked about how they... got into the truck with you and were alive. Okay. Are you 100% sure that's true? Okay.
Can we ask, go back just a second? You talked about before that Bella walked in, though, to the bedroom. Can you tell us about that before you left?
Yeah, I was just there, like, getting the sheet off the bed, and she walked in. And she had her little pink blanket with her. She It's like, what's wrong? John Mulaney.
And where was Shanann at that point?
Yeah, just pretty much on the bed, but she was face down.
Wrapped in a sheet? What'd you say?
I just said, you know, she doesn't feel good. That's why I tried to carry her downstairs.
Shanann?
Watts also discussed his thoughts toward his mistress, his own thoughts of suicide, and here he talks about going to the burial site with his children alive and his wife dead in the car. He says it was like someone else was controlling his body.
I woke back up.
Okay.
It's, I don't really want to talk about this part, honestly. Those are my kids. It's my baby. I have to talk to them every night. I have to see them.
Okay.
Every time I see pictures of them, I don't know how this could have happened. You know, being a dad was the best part of my life. I took it all away.
I think that's the hardest part for us, Chris, is we see those videos. We see that love that you had for your girls, like, it's obvious to us, and even to us, it's hard for us to understand how a dad who's given piggyback rides and, you know, making snacks and watching princess movies and those kinds of things, how you get to that point, you know?
I don't know. Just, like I said, it was just like something else was controlling me that day. I had no control over what I was, like, to fight back.
Yeah.
Like when that prosecutor said it fell a bitter tongue, like repeatedly, I just wanted to just bang my head up against the wall.
So you put Shanann in the truck and then you put the two girls in the truck? Were they just sitting in their car seats or I guess they didn't probably have car seats in your truck, did they?
No, they were sitting in the back with the, like in that bench seat.
So Shanann was back there too?
She was on the floor.
What did they say about Shanann being on the floor?
Mommy okay?
What'd you tell them?
She'll be fine.
Joining me tonight are criminal defense attorney Julie Rendleman and forensic death examiner Joseph Scott Morgan. So let me throw this on the table. Joseph, this guy is saying he's keeping pictures in his jail cell of his wife and his kids and he's reading to them. What do we make of this?
I guess at this point he's regretting these actions that he's taken, but it's a little bit too late at this point, isn't it? I don't know, and it goes again to the bizarre nature of him making this confession after the fact. I don't understand what his rationale is for anything he's done from the moment he took their lives to the moment he buried them. It's just beyond the pale.
Julie, do we even believe this guy, the crying? Do we believe the remorse? Do we even believe the facts here? Is it possible that he's just spinning up a tale?
I think it's possible. I have to say I do believe him. I mean, I hate that I have to believe someone who did something so brutal, but I think that, you know, look, you can hate him and despise him, but still I think part of the reason he's coming forward right now is because he is trying to explain for those who are asking the why and what happened, for them to have a better understanding of what went down. Maybe he's trying to clear his conscience. I don't know, but I tend to think that he's telling the truth about it.
Yeah, I mean, Joseph, some of what he says here actually rings true because of the forensic evidence that's been discovered. For instance, he said his wife didn't fight back, and that's why he didn't have any defensive wounds on him when police looked at him for such wounds. A couple of other things ring true here, but he also sort of describes a back and forth relationship as far as how he's relating to these women in his life, and he's got some contradictions in there.
Yeah, well, I have to say that the forensics does match up with the narrative that he's painting. Everything kind of falls in line relative to his lack of injuries, to the specific injuries, which were, you know, essentially limited on her body, but also the injuries to these two children, particularly Bella's body.
Exactly. We'll check in with the panel again when we come back. But first, to Chief Investigative Correspondent Brian Ross for a look at an all-new episode of Brian Ross Investigates.
Aaron, tonight on our program, Donald Trump under oath. Did he tell the truth when he tried to distance himself from a twice-convicted felon once tied to the Russian mafia, who then became a senior advisor to Donald Trump?
If he were sitting in the room right now, I really wouldn't know what he looked like.
Isn't it true that President Trump knew convicted Russian mobster Felix Sater in 2013 when he made that statement?
Yes.
And the lawyer with a newborn who Trump castigated as horrible and disgusting because she wanted a break to use a breast pump.
I've been called worse things on the playground when I was 9.
All that coming up, Aaron, tonight on Brian Ross Investigates. Aaron?
An action-packed show there, but still ahead tonight here on The Debrief, we head back to the Newman-Raja case, a verdict against a former Florida cop who shot and killed a stranded motorist. We're back inside the courtroom when we return. President Trump's former campaign manager is being sentenced on a conviction stemming from the investigation of special counsel Robert Mueller. Manafort was convicted of defrauding banks and the government and failing to pay taxes on millions of dollars he earned through political consulting in the Ukraine. The sentencing is happening literally as we speak right now, so we cannot give details. Manafort will be sentenced next week by a different judge for witness tampering and conspiracy. The owner of the New England Patriots will have to appear in court later this month on charges that he solicited a prostitute. The charge is a misdemeanor, and it comes as part of a larger law enforcement investigation into what authorities are saying is alleged sex trafficking. Kraft's arraignment is scheduled for March 24th, but his lawyer told Boston.com he's not required to attend. Court documents, however, state that the defendant, meaning Kraft, must be present for the hearing. Kraft is accused of paying women for sex acts at a day spa, including during the morning of the day the Patriots won an AFC championship game in Kansas City. An update tonight on the legal issues surrounding R. Kelly. Late yesterday, the singer was arrested for failing to pay child support. That comes after an explosive interview on CBS where Kelly denied involvement with sex crimes. He's currently charged in Chicago with 10 counts of sex abuse. Kelly says his accusers are conspiring to take him down and to make themselves both famous and rich. Two young women who lived with him defended him on morning television today. Julie Rendleman, I'd like to bring you into this discussion now. So you're a former prosecutor. If you were still prosecuting and you were prosecuting R. Kelly, would you be combing over that bombastic interview from yesterday morning where he basically blew up on camera? Would you be mining that for any nuggets of information you could use?
That's like a layup. Like, of course you're going to be going through every single word. I mean, look, as the defense attorney, you're, unless you're, with all due respect, an absolute moron, no one is ever telling R. Kelly to get into a room with an interviewer and give any information about this case whatsoever, especially the things he's saying, which honestly, as a prosecutor, you could tear apart. So of course I'm going to go through it, and as a defense attorney, I'm going to beg him never, never, never to open his mouth again.
Wow, those are strong words. So I'm glad that my predictions last night came true. I'm glad you agree with me. It's good to be in that
never
position.
Know if that's gonna happen.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on now. A Florida police officer headed to prison for shooting and killing a stranded African American motorist. Jurors today decided that Newman Raja was guilty as charged in the 2015 shooting death of Corey Jones. Jones's car broke down on an interstate exit ramp at 3 in the morning. Raja pulled up in front of him in an unmarked police vehicle and approached him without wearing a uniform. After a brief argument, Jones pulled a gun, so Raja shot him and claimed self-defense. The jury did not buy any such argument. The family of Corey Jones released a statement through attorneys. This verdict, they say, is a vindication of the good man that Corey Jones, and an utter repudiation of a criminal who tried to hide behind a badge. We see what can happen when prosecutors have the dedication to charge an on-duty law enforcement officer in the murder of an innocent black man, and what can happen when a thoughtful judge rejects a shameless ploy to use Florida's questionable stand your ground law as a shield against wrongdoing. The jury saw that this disgraced officer killed an innocent man, and it's only right that he now faces consequences for his horrendous actions. Back to the panel one last time on this conviction across the board for prosecutors. Joseph, let me start with you. Any surprise here from your perspective?
No. As I was watching this case last week in fall on Law and Crime, I just had a sense that this was going to be the outcome. There was nothing here to indicate that things had gone down as Raja had claimed. And just the bizarre nature, Aaron, of this event where he pulls in front of this young gentleman's car in the middle of this exit ramp, doesn't identify himself in an unmarked car, doesn't identify himself as a police officer. And the whole story about the laser attached to the weapon was something that didn't hold water with me either. So, yeah, I'm not surprised at all by the outcome.
It really doesn't help when he tells one version of the story and then the recording presumably tells a different version of it here. I was a bit on the fence with the attempted murder charge here. Was it the right charge? I mean, certainly the jury agreed that it was, but legally, was it the right charge?
I think it was. You know, it's always tough because one of the things I think one of the jurors spoke out in a written statement and basically explained, you know, that this isn't just a tragedy for Corey Jones's family. This is a tragedy for the defendant's family as well. Remember, he was a police officer. This was not a person that had committed crimes in the past. He made incredibly, incredibly poor judgment on that day and took someone's life. So I think while it's hard to bear, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, someone in a uniform committing such a crime, I think at the end of the day, I think the facts bore out that it was an attempted murder.
Yeah, I mean, Joseph, this guy had some brushes with the law, even though he was behind the badge. I mean, he was in trouble in high school. He was fighting. He was showing up on the scene of a domestic where he wasn't dispatched, and he was in plain clothes for that one. He was basically disciplined for failing to call off a pursuit, and now this.
Yeah, and just his vocalization at the, you know, per the recording at the scene, it made me take a step back. You know, he's throwing out profanities at this guy, asking him, are you good? Are you good? And then all of a sudden, he stops dropping F-bombs all over the place. I can see how it would put this young man back on his heels. It certainly put me back on my heels as just a listener.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the jury here likely agreed with the state's theory that Corey Jones died without ever knowing it was a police officer who pulled up near him. Joseph Scott Morgan, Julie Rendleman here in studio. Great to have you on The Debrief tonight.
Thank you for having us.
All right. And thanks for those of you watching at home. I'll be back tomorrow at 5 o'clock Eastern on the Law and Crime Network with this nightly recap of the best moments of testimony in cases nationwide. Our live trial begins at 9 in the morning. Up next, Brian Ross investigates.